Bishus Marina Rav Shlita. Once there were two cows grazing in a field and they saw a big milk van driving past. And on the side of the milk van it said, fresh milk, pasteurized, homogenized, vitamin A added, vitamin D added. And one cow says to the other, makes you feel rather inadequate, doesn't it? Milk is considered a staple part of diet, although there are those who will tell you that milk is very bad for you. Indeed, there are some who will even say that milk is a deadly poison. But we're not going to deal today with health aspects. We'll leave that to others. Although Sakanta Chamir Misura is a halachic issue, where if there is something danger, but the majority of the population accept it, and therefore it's permissible, etc., etc. What we're discussing today is something on the kashrus aspect. And the kashrus aspect relating to an issur d'oraisa, a possible issur d'oraisa, where the milk which we're drinking might be coming from an animal which has a category of trefo.
Right.
That's the question. Even without surgical procedures, and many cows nowadays do get surgical procedures, which might render them into the category of trefo. Now, the word, when we say trefo, we normally refer to it as being something which is not kosher. But the real word is an animal which is destined to die within 12 months, or, as the Mishnah Chulin enumerates, various aspects relating to injury can render it as a trefo. So if you perforate with a needle certain parts of a cow's body, you might be rendering it a trefo. And you don't know that the milk you're drinking, which cow it's coming from. And the complication is that in commercial milk production, as it is nowadays, it's not just one cow daisy on a local farm with a plump, rosy-cheeked lady pumping it with her hand. It could be 100 cows producing thousands of gallons of milk, and even if just some of those cows are in the category of trefo, then you have a problem in that the milk that you're drinking may be coming partly from a trefo cow. And this problem became highlighted particularly in 1994 in New York, when a shomer who was supervising milk under the rule of supervising milk noticed that certain cows he was looking at had scars relating to perforations which took place. They had actual surgery because of a disease which is called left displaced abomasum, which is some sort of intestinal injury. And it is said to cause by the wrong diet, that many cows are given more grain than they normally used to. Cows naturally graze on grass, but in order to increase milk production, they're given grain. And this gives rise to an illness which has not been found in Australia and New Zealand, where there's no grain-fed cows. And they found that this LDA, as the illness is called, was occurring in between 5 and 15% of cows. So even without the category of an ill cow, which would be rendered a trefo, if you've got 15% of cows in the production line producing non-kosher milk because they are trefo, and you can't drink milk from an animal which is deemed to be trefo, then if 15% of your milk is not kosher, then surely the whole mixture is not kosher. If we just go to basics on the principles of Taruvos, where 1 in 60 might be annulled, neutralized, 1 in 60 is only 1.6666%. And therefore, if the cows are all producing an equal amount of milk, and you've got 15% of cows producing milk which is from a trefo cow, then how can you possibly drink that milk? And this is nothing to do with Chol of Yisrael. So you might say to me, oh, the milk I'm getting from the local grocer shop, it's got a heksher on it of kedasya. Yeah, fine. That's a heksher to say that somebody was there to supervise that the milk came from a kosher animal, from a cow. But this shomer didn't do a biological examination of the cow. Alright, he might have noticed something unusual about it, but to actually establish whether a cow is properly trefo, you can't really find out unless it's been shechted. Because after shechita, check is carried out on a cow, they take the lungs, and even that is not in itself the only trefo to check. But the lungs are checked, and if there is an adhesion or a perforation in the lungs, then the whole cow is considered not kosher, and it's not. And in fact, once I went to watch Chita, a procedure which I recommend very highly, and and the day that I went, there were 18 cows being shechted, and only 6 were kosher. 12, therefore, 12 were checked on the lungs and had adhesions or perforations. And that renders the whole cow treifa. So what do we do in the case of milk when you can't even check the lungs? What's the situation?
Can you explain the word milk coming from a cow's treifa?
Right, yeah, I'll come to that. I mean, in background terms, milk is regarded as a very praiseworthy food. We've got the land of Israel described as Eretz Zovas Cholav Udvash. Why does the Torah choose to describe the land of Israel with milk and with honey? I mean, really, you could describe the land of Israel as a land of oranges and apples nowadays. Orange phones and apple computers. The Gemara in Avodah Zorah says that you might assume that milk is a form of blood, and you might wonder whether you can drink it because it's derived from the blood of the cow. Also, you might assume that it might be a form of Eiver Min Hachai. Like, just like you can't eat from the limb of a living animal, maybe you can't drink milk because it's from a living animal. So the Gemara goes to the point of saying that you are allowed to drink milk generally. The Torah would not praise the land of Israel with a food which is not kosher. And in any case, it says that you may not mix meat with milk, which infers that you can drink milk. So that milk on its own is okay. There is a pasuk, Devash l'chonov tachas l'shoneich in Shir Hashirim, chapter 4, honey and milk under your tongue, again, as praiseworthy foods. And the Mefarshim explain that these are allegories to learning Torah. Because milk and honey have the symbolism of richness, growth, and sweetness. Milk is a growth food. You change a very tiny calf into a huge, massive, heavy cow just in the space of a year or two. And milk is a growth food, and so there's something which symbolizes richness. The Yalkut Shimoni in Mishlei, in chapter 8, says that milk is of superior quality. It's a food of richness. It's a food of nourishment. Honey is sweetness. And so this pasuk of Tavash L'Cholov is alluding to the idea of richness and sweetness in the Torah. And there are many facets of Torah which are very tasty. And honey and milk therefore allude to the power of Torah, which transform a person from his soul to one of purity. In the Kabbalah, wine, which is red, is a symbol of judgment, of Midas Hadin, and milk is a symbol of Midas Rachamim, of mercy, because milk is white, and we associate the color of white with Teshuvah and Midas Rachamim, of mercy, hence our white covers on the Yomim Noroim. And the custom of having milky foods on Shavuos, there are a number of reasons given, but one of them is that when we received the Torah, Hashem was giving us divine compassion, that we were worthy to receive the Torah. Maybe we were not worthy, but with his rachamim he gave it to us, and so we drink milk on Shavuos to symbolize the idea of Hashem's divine compassion. And just like, says the Imre Noah, milk sustains a child, so the Torah sustains the soul. And so another idea of drinking milk on Shavuos. So as I said, you will say, look, the milk I get has a hechsher. It's down to the rabbis. They say it's kosher. I don't have to worry about it. So even if you say it comes from a treifa, it's got a hechsher on it, surely it must be all right. I leave this to the rabbis. Okay, that's fair enough. We do trust in the rabbis. But it's correct for us to understand and to study, why is it that this milk is okay to drink? Why is it that despite all these problems which I've already summarized, the rabbis are saying that we can drink the milk in the local store? Especially it's got the hechsher on it. We're not discussing today the idea of supervised milk, because that's another subject of its own. And you hear of certain heterim which Rabbi Moshe Feinstein gave in certain circumstances. But the fact of the matter is that what we see from this example is that when you do have a shomer coming to look at the milk, rather than drinking any milk, which has just the OUD, so to speak, that showman may notice things, as they did in New York City from the Kaladas Yeshurun, this was from the Eckers, that there may be a problem, and that the showman can then instruct the farm, saying, can you please withdraw any cows which have had this surgery of left displaced abomasum? And then already you're putting yourself in safer ground, irrespective of the idea of Kol of Yisrael. So, can you drink milk from a kosher animal? The Gemara in Bechara says yes, and not from a non-kosher animal, and explains how. And we got the pasuk of Vasa b'stei b'trefa lo zochelu. You can't eat from a trefa animal, and from there it's derived that you cannot drink milk. And the Mishnah and Gemara bring this down in Chulin, in Mem Beis, it lists the types of trefa, and the Rambam in Hilchas Shechita, Perek Yud, Halacha Tes, lists 70 types of trefa. Now, the Gemara in Chulin Yud Aleph says you don't really have to establish on the outset whether a cow is a trefa. If you know for sure that a cow is a trefa, right, that's one thing. But otherwise, you don't have to go and do checking to decide whether a cow is trefa. Why? Because you go according to the majority of cows. The majority, you go according to the majority is a very important principle in the Torah. You go bosor rov. And therefore, since the rov do not have impediments, therefore you can assume that the animal which you're eating from is from the rove, and you can eat its meat and drink its milk without checking. The actual check which is done on the lungs on a slaughtered animal is done as a precaution, but me'ikar din, it's not really essential because of this principle of rove. Rav Chanan Lasman writes in his Kovitz Biurim that even if there's only one cow in the whole world, you can still use the principle of rove, because if there would be more cows, it would certainly be in the majority which are kosher. Quite an amazing kind of lomdus. But the Rambam says in Chulin Gimel that you can't rely on the principle of rove if there is something called miut hamotsoi. Miut hamotsoi means that when there is an established fact that you do have a specific proportion which is known to be not kosher, then you have to be cautious. You have to be wary. Now, what is miut hamotsoi? And there's an argument between the Rishonim as to what that is. According to the Rivash, it's close to 50%. But we don't paskin that way. The Mishkan of Siakov in Yerodeo Yud Zayin says that we say 10%. And that is the accepted view. That miut hamotsoi means already by 10% you have to be extra cautious. This principle also applies to checking for insects, flour, rice, fruit. If there's a miut hamotsoi, then you have to check. Otherwise, there may be some sort of chazoka. So in Yerodeo Lamed Tes, we talk about the lungs being checked when the animal has been checked. But for milk, obviously, you can't check the lungs. It's too late. So what is the proportions of cows which have trefas, have adhesions on their lungs? Even without this LVA problem, even without surgery, what is the proportion of those cows which have not had surgery, which might be rendered a trefa by finding a perforation in their lungs? There was one shoka in South Africa who claimed that as many as 95% of cows have this problem. But we've got to remember, Rav David Bleich writes on this, he says, you've got to realize that the cows which are shechted are usually older cows than the cows which are giving milk. And so as they get older and they develop various forms of disability, then it's more likely that adhesions will occur in older cows than in younger cows. Rabbi Yisrael Meir Levinger, who is a big world expert on the subject of trefus, he was until recently the rabbi of Basel, Switzerland, but he's now retired in Eretz Israel, and he did a survey of 8,000 cows which are shechted in Israel, and he found that of calves, 6.73% had adhesions on the lungs, and 14.22% of cows had adhesions on the lungs, which is already a very noticeable proportion. It's certainly above the 10% of miut hamotsoi. And it's thought that when weaning takes place of cows which are being prepared for shechita, those cows develop colds and coughing, and that results in adhesions. Any illness in the cow can affect what then takes place on the lungs. It's a symptom that there's been some illness in the cow. On the subject of left displaced abomasum caused by diet, it's a puncture of the abdominal wall. And there's no question about the fact, from the Mishnah in Chulin Membeis, that this is the kevah, and this is therefore a definite trefa in itself. And the Gemara in Chulin Samaches, that once an animal is a trefa, it's always a trefa. If it becomes healed, it's still regarded as having that disability. So even if the animal survives more than 12 months, that is not really relevant, because the principle of 12 months is more approachable to the idea of if there's a suffix trefa. If you don't know if it's going to die within 12 months, it's a trefa. But if you have one of these perforations as listed in the Mishnah, then even if the animal lives longer than 12 months, it's still called a trefa. So what do we do? If the milk we're drinking is, say, from a batch of 100 cows, the chances are statistically that from those 100 cows, at least two will be in the category of trefa. If we look, use Rav Levinger's figures, yeah, 6.73% or 14.22% means out of 100 cows, 14 or 15 cows will become in the category of trefa. If, therefore, you take the milk from all those cows on the dairy line, then more than 1/60th of your milk will be treif. And therefore, how can you say that the milk that you're drinking is kosher? I mean, this is a daily problem. Every day you sit down to your cornflakes and milk. Are you drinking kosher milk? Unless you're a vegan, yes.
When you come up 1/60th, it's when you know something's actually treif, actually. I mean, meat and the milk falling into a chicken soup or something, and then we say after the event that's bottles. In this case, you don't actually know for sure that anything is, and then couldn't you not go after the bottle of rose?
Right, yeah, this is one of these issues we're coming to. There's a chulas called Tiferes Tzvi, which is quoted already in the Pischei Teshuvah, Medarkei Teshuvah, and then Yerodeh Simon Yud Gimel, he delves onto a number of issues to decide why we can drink milk as the way we do nowadays. The first question which he asks is, how do we define the majority? We say we go bosorov. So until now we were talking about, I saw 18 cows shechted and 6 were kosher. Well, if we go bosorov, then most are treif. But that, he says, is not how you calculate bosorov. He says you have to count not only the slaughtered cows, but also all the non-slaughtered cows. So if you take the whole population of cows, then you're going bosorov. So if you include the living as well, then you'll definitely be able to say that most cows are okay, and that's bosorov.
Is this milk-giving cows, or...?
Yes. So we could say milk-giving cows, but you could even say cows which are either not milk-giving, because that will widen the statistics. You're entitled, he says, to say that you take the population of cows. A cow is only milk-giving if it's just gave birth to a calf in the recent past. But there are other cows which haven't given birth. But we're looking at the trefus of cows generally, and therefore, he says, you can take and count the whole cow population.
It's just calves that have only just been born in them,
basically. Right. Okay, there's an additional consideration, which he quotes from the Ramot in Simon Pei Aleph Sif Beis, that when you have an adhesion or perforation in the lungs of a cow, you are entitled to assume that that adhesion only recently or very recently formed. In fact, only in the last 3 days. And that is an assumption which comes into the category of chazokah, which brings him to the next idea by the Tiferes Tzvi.
Who was the he?
The Tiferes Tzvi. Quotes a Rashba in Chulin Yud Aleph, who says that there is an idea, apart from Bosarov, that there is a presumption. And that goes, Henry, according to what you were saying. Without direct evidence to the contrary, because as you say, you know that something's been mixed up, it fell, the milk fell into the chicken soup or whatever, 60th. But he says there is a chazokah. Chazokah is a very strong principle. The nearest English word is probably a presumption, but it's a bit stronger than a presumption. It's that although you have no evidence to the contrary, therefore you will come to the conclusion that it is kosher. So it's more than a presumption. And that principle of chazokah is brought in Yerodeh Simon Pei Aleph Sif Beis. And every animal has a chazokah of being kosher. And on this, he says, there are really three kinds of trefus. One kind is when an animal is born from birth and it's deformed. So rather it's a trefa. There's no question about it. Then the second category of trefa is when it develops something which is a disability just before it dies. Like we said, that an adhesion in the lungs might be just within the last 3 days. It could be a hole in the brain membrane and something like that. So when the animal gets ill, that's what causes its death. So it's just before its death, it becomes trefa. And then he says there's a third category, which still takes 3 days to develop, and that would include adhesions or perforations of the lungs. So if the milk is being derived from the animal more than 3 days before its shechita, which is usually the case, there is a chazoka that if that animal dies of trefa, it will only be trefa after it's been milked. And that's the chazoka. And chazoka is a very, very strong aspect of Jewish law. You go into the Encyclopedia Talmudis and you see how many pages there are written about chazoka. It's a very, very strong presumption. There's a third issue brought by the Teferis Tzvi, and that's this. He says, we've got a principle called sex faker, when there is a double doubt of something. So he says, there's a doubt whether the adhesion on the lungs makes a genuine trefa. Because according to many poskim, and there's an argument between Rashi and Tosfos on this, whether an adhesion on the lungs makes a direct trefa. Because according to Tosfos, the adhesion on the lungs means that it will become a trefa. There might not yet be a hole in it. What I watched the Shochtim doing when they took out the lungs was they were putting water on it to see if there are any bubbles coming out. That would be a proper perforation. But sometimes you get adhesions on the lungs where you see little strands and there's no actual hole. That is not really a trefa animal. It's going to become a trefa. When you hear the terminology of glatt kosher, glatt means when there are no adhesions or strands whatsoever. And it's perfectly smooth. The word glatt means smooth. And then that is a better way of determining that, you know, a chumra to make sure that what you're eating is glatt kosher. So there is a doubt sometimes whether an adhesion is an actual trefa. It's really a precaution that we treat it as a trefa when we're checking the lungs. And secondly, that might have developed only after the milk was taken out from the cow. So after the milking process, the adhesion developed. So there's a sex fake or whether at the time of milking there was a category of trefa. Fourthly, he brings a Shagas Aryeh. And the Shagas Aryeh quotes an Ozor Ruah, who said that you're not allowed to shecht on Yom Tov in an area where most animals are regarded as trefa. Now, we don't normally shecht on Yom Tov, but Mikadin, you're allowed to shecht an animal on, just like you cook on Yom Tov, you're allowed to shecht an animal on Yom Tov, because you're allowed to achashei achol achol nefesh hu levadei oseh lochem. So food preparation within certain parameters is allowed on Yom Tov. You can't cut the grain in the field. That, although you'll say that's food preparation. But the idea is that in order to have really fresh foods, and they didn't always have freezers and fridges, you may shecht before Yom Tov. Now, in an area, you may shecht on Yom Tov. So if you are in an area where it is already known that most of the animals are trefa, then the Ozara says you can't shecht on Yom Tov, because that shechita will then be leaning to a malacha, because you're not, you know, the chances are you're not going to have a kosher animal anyway. Now, the Shagas Aryeh says that although most animals are regarded in that area as trefa, they would still have been allowed to drink the milk of those cows. So you may shecht normally, but when you are having this chumrah of not shechting the cows on Yom Tov, that milk which you derive before Yom Tov, of course, because you don't milk cows on Yom Tov, you may still have the milk. Why is that? He says, look, many adhesions are not trefa, and we're machmir when we're shechting, and the trefa and the adhesions may have developed afterwards, and not at the time of milking, which is in any case as a younger cow, and therefore you may still drink the milk from those cows. Then he also quotes a Mishkanos Yaakov, which talks about the status of milk. Milk has a greater chazoka than meat in terms of kashrus. Meat, there's a din of Eva Min Achai. Milk, there's no din of Eva Min Achai. So from that point of view, with chazoka that the animal is more okay halachically when it's alive for purposes of milk than for purposes of meat. So we might be machmir in times when we're eating the meat, but as far as the milk is concerned, we can be more lenient on that basis. Although then they stopped shechita on Yom Tov, they didn't stop the milking. Now there is a remark which says in Siman Pei Aleph that we rely on this principle of Rove. Now we just give ourselves an idea of what this idea of principle of Rove is, and this very much hedges towards Henry's question. There's a din called Kol Kavua Kemechtzal Mechtza Domi. If you have 9 shops which are selling kosher meat in one shopping parade, you've got 9 shops on Brent Street selling kosher meat and a 10th shop which is selling trefa meat, and there's a package of meat found right outside those shops, and it doesn't carry a label as to which shop it was from. Very foolish. Kosher shop, kosher meat should always be sealed and with a stamp or with some name of where it's from. But I have seen this in kosher shops. Years ago there was a shop selling kosher organic chickens, and I had a look at them and I noticed that they were just in plastic bags. There was no seal on them even. And I asked about this, you know, how can you say this? Oh, it's under the heksher of whatever place. I said, yeah, but how can I have a heksher? It's not sealed. Meat has to be sealed because of another din of bosa shim salim in ayin. If meat is left unattended, it could be switched for other meat. Meat has to be sealed. It's got to be packaged in a certain way. There was once a caterer who wanted to express his thanks to me for something I did for him. So he gave me his usual bits of chulent and kigel and all sorts of other meat, none of which I would normally eat. And he left it on my front door because there was nobody there to answer the door. And we came home, and on that there was a tray on the front doorstep of all these different kinds of meats. And there was no seal on them. Oh, his name was on it though, the name of his firm. So I phoned him up and said, thank you very much, it's very kind of you, but the meat you left, you know, it wasn't sealed. Oh, it's all right, he said, I was watching the guy who delivered it, I was sitting in the car outside. I said, well, that's not good enough, is it? The meat wasn't sealed. It was left unattended for I don't know how long. Oh, it couldn't have been very long because... Anyway, I said, I don't think... And this is a Kedasha caterer. And I'm in a shul of the Adas where Kedasha is the heksha of this institution. But we have to be careful, yes?
I do this food for the shul. And obviously, we only collect meat from Kedasha. And the Rav has insisted that every container that we have with meat is sealed.
Right.
When I collect it, I said, look, you haven't sealed it. We know about your rod. He's the one who insists. Many other rabbonim don't. And so they are aware, and the rod has been to Kedashia to say that the caterers must seal the meat. And a few rabbonim insist, but most do not. However, our rod is known that when I collect, they know. I collect more than one Kedashia caterer and provider of food, and they know what they should do.
Well, I will leave it to our learned Rabboni to explain to you if and why they don't insist on sealed meat. There might be other simon in which they rely on, I don't know. All I can say is I can quote from the halacha that meat which is unattended has to be sealed. We've gone off the subject a little bit, but it's also important on the subject of kashrus. You can't also say rup de bosa rov. You can't say, oh, well, the majority of meat is sealed and therefore I can have this meat if it's unsealed. It doesn't work that way. What we were talking about, the interesting principle of 9 shops plus 1. Kol kavur kemechtzal mechtzadomi means that you can't use this principle of bosel b'shishim, of 1 in 60, if something is recognizable and fixed on site. You've got 9 shops which are selling kosher meat and one shop which is selling non-kosher meat, we don't say there's a 10% chance that the meat is not kosher. We say there's a 50% chance that the meat is not kosher, because each shop which is fixed in front of you is there in front of your eyes, so we say it's fixed, so that's a 50% chance. So that meat is regarded as not kosher. Even if it's got a Kadashi seal on it and it's not sealed. Because one of the other butcher shops, the non-kosher one, might have forged a seal on it, nicked one from its neighbor. But then the Shulchan Aruch makes a, the important principle of that once the meat is taken away to somewhere else, then there is a principle of kol de porish miruva porish, that whenever something's been separated from its source, then there is a principle of rov. So once the meat is brought to another place, the meat is brought home, then we will assume that it is from the rov. It is from the majority. The majority being 90% kosher. So if there is a question of 90% kosher, and you go basarov, well, with solids, min bamino, there's an idea of basarov. I don't want to get tied down into various fascinating principles of taruas, but sometimes something can be basarov 1 in 3 rather than 1 in 60. But that's the subject for another time. What we're going to just look at, this principle of rov, is something we have to think about for a moment, and that is this. When you've got your 60th, which is botel, do we say that that 60th remains in a non-kosher state? Or do we say that by virtue of its being mixed, it is already kosher before it is mixed? What do we identify that with? And this is a very important issue. Kol de porish meruva porish, the svara behind it is that every individual item is called kosher, even though this, you'll say, contradicts the statistics. The halacha is not based on statistical probabilities, even though that's what it sounds like when we talk about being nullified b'shishin. The idea is that every single part is then considered kosher. There is another idea, which the Chasam Sofer brings in his Shuvas Eben Ezer Chelek Aleph Siman Hei. He says, when we talk about the rov, you might think that basar rov means that the majority of kosher, he says, the majority of what is not examined is kosher. He says, we will exclude from the calculation that which you've already established to be non-kosher, that's been disqualified, and then we look at the rest of what is not examined, of what we don't know about, and on that we say the rov is kosher, which increases the chances of the kashrus. So he says, it's possible that there isn't a single trefa animal in the whole world except those which are known to us. Those we know about, okay, they're trefa, but every single other animal, we have the assumption of chazoka and of rov, and therefore we will say that since we've got no evidence that there is any trefa animal in the rest of the world, then every single other animal in the world is regarded as kosher.
You just said chazoka and rov. I thought they were the same.
They're not entirely the same. Because chazaka is on everything, yeah, rov is on the majority, but then draws into it the other parts. But there is a fine line to be drawn between them. So on this basis, the recent poskim, and this is summarized by Rav Bleich in his Contemporary Halachic Problems, that we are allowing milk on the principle of basar rov, even when you have reason to believe from previous surveys that more than 2%, more than your 60th, is not kosher. Because each individual cow is regarded as a kosher cow unless you have evidence to the contrary. So it's not the same as when a piece of milk falls into the chicken soup. That's called nishpach. It becomes nullified, it becomes mixed. You can't see it anymore, you can't pull it out, so that becomes nullified. But here we're going even further and saying that every single cow is considered kosher unless you've got evidence to the contrary. And this is a remarkable idea in halacha. And the Chasam Sofer says something very important as a fundamental principle. Because you get people who say, oh, I want to be machmir. Because if, you know, 10% miyotamotsoi, I'm not going to drink commercial milk. Because of all these gallons of milk, it's inevitable that some of them will be from trefa cows. And Rav Bleich actually mentions that there are people who are going machmir, and they'll only drink milk from the local farm, where you know the cow, or you have reason, it hasn't had any surgery. Here in Golders Green Hendon, we don't have any cows. There used to be a college farm, some milking going on, but even that stopped. But commercially produced you know, they do thousands and thousands of gallons of milk in one go. So within that bottle of milk which you see in front of you, there could be milk from 100 different cows, of which there are statistics to say that there are treifas. So the Chasam Sofer says in Orach Chaim, Siman Pei Gimel, something quite amazing. He says, the one who commanded us and forbade us to eat treifas is the same one who commanded us to rely on the principle of rov and chazokah. Hashem is the one who commanded us the din of treifa, and he is the one who has commanded us on the din of rov. And therefore, if you were to be suspect and say, I'm not going to drink this milk, then you're going against the very chazal who have interpreted what the principle of rov means. And then you're doing an avera if you're saying, I'm denying myself the milk for that reason. So Rav Moshe Feinstein brings out this principle in the Dibros Moshe. He says, this principle of Kol Deporish is that each and every entity is part of that rov. So not even one of those entities are regarded as treif. So we're ignoring human intellect here. Statistical probabilities. Once you start doing the mathematics of not just the cows you have in front of you, but all the cows and so on, and it's amazing how many decimals and things you can come up with, whatever. But without the mathematics, we are putting aside human intellect, and we're putting in really in front of us what the halacha is. The halacha is based on a principle which is handed down to us back to Har Sinai, that you go according to the rov. So if you are saying that your intellect is superior to that, you are disputing the Torah. It's an amazing chiddush.
Why can't we apply this to eating meat? I know we have to check things, but is there actually a command to examine it? Where do we get the idea of examining?
The truth is that you will never be able to establish 100% if an animal has been a treifa when you checked it. Although you check the lungs, we said there are 70 different treifas enumerated by the Rambam. And it's possible that at the place where the knife has cut the animal, there could have been some impediment at that point. So you can't even see it once the shechting has taken place. So there's no way you're going to be 100% in establishing. But where facts are before your eyes, then you do have a duty to take note of those facts. So when, for example, when this showman in New York actually observed scars from surgery on the cows, he investigated it, because then one has a duty, because it's staring before you. So the principle of chazokah or rov, you do set aside when evidence is staring at you in the face. And when that's happening, then you've got a duty to investigate. And we do have this practice and the surah to check the lungs after an animal is shechted. But that on its own, although it is indicative, it's indicative if there's some disease in the animal. But even that on its own is not enough to determine if the animal is a treifa. But we'd still then use the principle of bosarov, because it's impossible to do checking on every single aspect of the animal. There comes one further question. Once we discuss the idea of kashrus, that apart from being halachic, there is something called timtum halev. And that is that when a person eats non-kosher food, it has an effect on a person, something spiritual. And this is what can be worrying many people if they inadvertently eat something which is not kosher. When there was this fraud which went on in Monsey some years ago, and somebody was selling non-kosher meat, and all the kalim had to be thrown out. Okay, people were for shogeg, what could they do? But what worried people most of all was the fact that the mob rings down, even though this is something not so halachic, but something spiritual, that there is the idea of timtum halev. It has an effect on you when you eat non-kosher food. So what about the fact that even if statistically or bosarov, you are saying it's okay to drink the milk, but some of that milk you're drinking was from a non-kosher animal? So the Sefer Shulchan Gemara says no. Because this principle of rov is so strong, and as Rav Moshe says, that each and every individual entity is regarded as kosher once you've applied bosarov, then the timtum halev also doesn't come into it, because everything in it is regarded as kosher. It's quite amazing and startling that the milk that you're drinking every day in your coffee and in your cornflakes, goes through this sort of exercise of halachics to determine that it's okay, because from the outset, from pure human logic, you should never drink any milk.
That yes? applies to bottom of the shishim. Same thing.
Yes. The principle of bottle the shishim is that once something is nullified, the whole lot is called kosher. Although there is a chumra already in the Shulchan Aruch where if you've got, say, three eggs, so it's bos or rov, and one of them you know is not kosher, then you shouldn't eat them all together in one go. There the Shulchan Aruch is saying that you'll eat one and you'll say the chafer one is once one of the others. And then afterwards, when you eat the third one, you say, oh, the chafer one's already been eaten. You're not going to eat all of them at the same time, but that is really a chumrah. Mitzad Hadin, they all are becoming a status of kosher. It's a fascinating subject, Harivos, because when you look at these principles of Rov and Chazoka and so on, you are entering a complete new world where it doesn't go according to simple human intellect. But these are principles which are handed down from Chazal, Dor L'Dor, right back to Moshe Rabbeinu, and on that we base our principles of kashrus. Thank you very much.
It's 5%. I looked it up. When you were speaking, I looked it up. It's 5%, 4.69 or 4.89. But that's not halachically what we would say. I'm just saying what they would describe as an adhesion, all right? Which is a big difference.
Yes.
Or could be. I have no idea what their criteria is. But enormous money is involved in this. Absolutely. Because, and I can remember going to a milk producing farm in Eretz Yisrael once and looking at the mechanics of everything they do in order to get the highest possible yield, because it's enormous money, right? And what they spend on medication is phenomenal.
Well, one point we didn't discuss was if an animal recovers from its illness,
yes,
is it then, alright, we said it's still called a trefer,
yes,
but what we didn't discuss is if modern medicine can cure an animal that it won't die within 12 months, does it then still be called a trefa? And the answer is that it is, according to the Rambam. There is a bit of a dispute on this. So, modern medicine, and you talk about antibiotics, don't help.
No, I'm saying, precisely. So what I'm saying, even when a shaman goes and has a look at a lab, it could already have had treatment. No, I don't mean a scar, I mean something else.
You don't have to worry about that.
Well, yeah, but
as I said, the advantage of having a shomer, apart from the Chol of Yisrael aspect, is that he might notice anything about impediments or disabilities of cows, which could render them trefa, and he could say, I want those withdrawn from the herd.
Yeah.
Mr. Fowler Farm will not take kindly to all this. He makes Mr. Fowler Farm, because he makes all his business from the kosher milk.
Excellent.
Going down the road.
In regards to my
growth,
I was in Israel.
Do all the kosher milk?
No, the kosher milk comes from cold farm. The other milk comes from
It's easier with a local farm. Because the main problem is with commercial farming when they've got lots of cows.
But if you
have
a farm,
you can only get one from holiday. I was told
it's a long line. Yeah, but you've still got
one person.
You look in the keli that it's empty beforehand.
Yeah,
the cow has the principle of rove, and you can drink its milk after you've watched it. If there is some visual impediment, then you can query it.
I wonder what I'm looking at.
Mabel from Edgware and Manchester.
But no, once you watch the book, then it's okay. We've got these principles of rove and chazoka.
And
they are really treated as separate answers by this Tiferes Tzvi. Because when we talk about Rove, he says we want to include the living cows as well. When we're talking about Chazoka, there is a presumption in a separate sense. It's not that you're counting.
where LBD
yeah.
It's from Gemara Chulin Yudalev that there are different kinds of traces,
yeah.
And on some we will definitely disqualify, but there are others where we say it takes 3 days to develop. There is a principle of chazaka, irrespective of road.
Your chazaka is the thing which says that the problem occurred after,
because only within 3 days before Shkita the adhesion developed,
right.
So that makes a chazaka. That's nothing to do with road.
Separate
explanation for our leniency, if I may use that word.
Yeah, right.
And so you can assume that it became trefa only afterwards.
Right.
So in the principle of rove, you're saying that there are some many which are not trefa and some which are trefa. In the principle of chazaka, you're saying there are no trefas because that trefa only came about within 3 days of shkita.
Right, I agree. They are separate. Right. Thank you. Right.
And the second question is, what were you saying about this machlokes Rashi says it's about sircha? You mentioned it's part of the sex seeker.
According to Rashi, the moment you've got that adhesion on the lungs, we say it's trefa.
Yeah.
But Tosfos is saying that you don't necessarily have a perforation in the lungs,
right.
And he says the adhesion is only, they say, the adhesion is only something which shows that the hole will develop at a later date.
Don't forget that I always understood that a sircha is a growth to repair a hole in the lung.
It's something which is developing into a hole.
Right. Don't forget. I'm sure I've learned that a sircha, there's a hole in the lung, and the body repairs itself with a sircha, where you get this like mucus-like thing which goes from the lung to the ribcage.
Let's see here. I've got it here. The enumerated article. Russian
post.